Blog Talk Radio.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Allahu Akbar, Allah.
With liberty and justice for all, good evening, Radio Jihadists. You're back with ACT Radio Jihad, the patriotic resistance movement. Our call in number is 347-857-1380. That's 347-857-1380. I'm Vito Esposito, and thank you for joining us tonight. I'm flying solo right now, so give us a call. What's on your mind? Do you think that Islam is undermining the United States of America? Last night we ended with a thread that the difference between Islam and Christianity and Judaism is that Islam does not believe that Jesus Christ was a son of God. They'll tell you that he was a son of Mary. They relegate Christ to a mere prophet behind Muhammad. They do not believe that Jesus Christ was crucified, ascended into heaven, rose from the dead. No, they believe that Muhammad is the man, and the plagiarized writings of the Quran, plagiarized it from the Torah and from the Bible. No, they have a difference of opinion, but they want you to believe that they believe in Jesus as well. They believe in Moses and Abraham. But there is a difference, ladies and gentlemen. The difference is that they believe in world domination. They believe you live by the sword, you die by the sword. Here's a passage from Mark Gabriel's book, Coffee with the Prophet. It says, Al-Zawahiri, you remember Ayman al-Zawahiri, he's the second in command to Al-Qaeda. In an article of March 1996, al-Zawahiri told a story about a battle Muhammad led personally against Taif, a Jewish village near Medina. Muhammad commanded the army to use their weapons against everyone in the village, men, women, children, and the elderly. In another hadith, and the hadith is basically the writings of what Muhammad said, Muhammad had prohibited killing women and children, but when he attacked the city of Taif, the Jewish village, he killed everybody inside. At the time, women and children were there in the middle of the enemies, and there was no way to separate the enemies from them, so we had to kill them. This will give us light on the subject of killing the enemies of Islam who have Muslims in the middle of them. According to the law of Islam, it's one of the biggest sins for a Muslim to kill a Muslim brother. But they have a but in there, but if there's no way to kill the enemy without killing the Muslims in the middle of them, we should kill them, and the enemies will go to hell, and Muslims will go to paradise. That's Ayman al-Zawahiri. So the belief factor is it's okay to kill Muslims when you're going to kill the infidel. And we know how Islam is undermining the United States of America and the Western democracies from within. We see it every day. We see it from Washington, D.C. to California. We're seeing it in Minnesota. We're seeing it in Detroit. 2 weeks ago, last week, we had David Wood on and his three friends who were involved in an incident that occurred at the Arab Festival in Dearborn, Michigan. Now, here you have a police chief who is a Muslim arrest four Christians for standing on the corner and for taking pictures using a movie camera. They were on public property, but apparently there was a city ordinance that was passed that did not allow for Christians to attend and, as they say, were proselytizing, except one thing. The pictures are clearly showing that the individuals that are labeled Christians, the Christians were on the street corner minding their own business, and they were watching. They weren't proselytizing. They weren't raising any cane. They weren't disrupting the organization. However, it only took one Muslim, and we see this from Iraq to Afghanistan, who are incriminating our brave men and women over there who are actually getting arrested and they're losing their stripes. But in Dearborn, right here in the United States of America, we had the issue of David Wood and his three friends who were just standing, minding their own business. They were attending the Arab Film Festival. They weren't passing out any literature. They were answering questions of people when people came up to them. But they were arrested by the Dearborn police. So we have an incident of Sharia law going into effect where Sharia takes precedent over the United States Constitution. Hey, you remember that document, the United States Constitution? It was drawn up by these old guys back in 1776, and the First Amendment of the Constitution gives you the right of free speech, the right to peaceably assemble, the right to petition the government for redress of grievances, the right to freedom of religion. It doesn't apply in Dearborn, Michigan. Dearborn is one of those Muslim no-go zones. And we have another issue that's arisen, and this is from an article that was sent out today by ACT for America, and you can read it for yourself to show that I'm not changing anything here. Go to actforamerica.org. New Jersey judge rules it's not rape when a Muslim forces himself on his wife. It's not rape. New Jersey judge rules this. Recently, an ABC News story scoffed at the Oklahoma referendum going to the voters that prohibits the courts from using Sharia law in their decisions. The implication was that there was no need for this, really. Well, Jihad Watch reported, www.jihadwatch.com, reported on Saturday that a New Jersey judge ruled that a Muslim man accused of forcing non-consensual sex on his wife was not guilty because of religious beliefs. Here's a portion of the ruling, and that should leave no doubt that Islamic Sharia law is penetrating America. This is the judge's ruling. The court does not feel that under the circumstances that this defendant had a criminal desire to or intent to sexually assault or to sexually contact the plaintiff when he did. The court believes that he was operating under his belief that it is, as the husband, his desire to have sex when and whether he wanted to, and it was something that was consistent with his practices, and it was something that was not prohibited. So he practices rape on his wife on a consistent basis. Huh. Interesting. In other words, the husband's belief in Sharia law trumps the New Jersey criminal law and, of course, the United States Constitution. The husband did not commit a crime because he was acting according to Sharia law. Well, there's some good news here, ladies and gentlemen. Fortunately, an appellate court had the good sense to overturn this absurd decision. But don't let anyone tell you, you don't need to worry about Sharia law being imposed on us in America or on Muslims who do not wish to be subject to. Sharia law in New Jersey, Muslim husband rapes wife, judge sees no sexual assault because Islam forbids wife to refuse sex. Where are the women's groups? Where is now the National Organization of Women, or as Limbaugh says, the NAGS? Why aren't they coming to this lady's defense? The rules are different for Islam, so now I guess it's okay if we get the same judge for a 50-year-old man to marry a 6-year-old girl in New Jersey and consummate the marriage at age 9. Why, that is not forbidden under Islamic law. So we're talking about Sharia law being implemented in the state of New Jersey, but, you know, a thought came to mind is, what about the Jehovah Witness or the Christian Science believers that don't believe in transfusions of blood, don't believe in the type of medical treatment that jeopardizes the lives of their child or the lives of their loved ones, and the courts have to step in, and the courts come in and they say that that child does need a blood transfusion in order to save its life because the experts, the medical doctors, agreed that that should happen. So is in New Jersey, are the rules different there now? Since when in the United States of America are we going to push aside the United States Constitution in favor of another religion. Why, I thought that the Constitution prohibits the favoring of one religion over another. Are these the type of judges that are going to be occupying the benches around the United States of America? We have an issue in Florida, in Orlando, Florida. There is the judge, there's a judge's race, I think it's for the Ninth Circuit Court in Orange and Seminole County, Florida, where the attorney for the Rivka Barry parents, and they were the, basically, if you don't remember the story, Rivka Barry is a 17-year-old girl who converted to Christianity at the age of 14. Her parents had threatened to kill her because she apostatized. She became a Christian. She left the Islamic religion. She found the religion of truth. She believed in Jesus Christ, and she believes, and to this day, she still believes in Christ. But her parents basically wanted her back. She moved from Columbus, Ohio. She came down, was befriended by a family, a pastor and his wife. They did the right thing when she came down. They called the Orlando Police Department, and the Orlando Police took her into custody under the Child Services. The parents tried to get her back. Courts intervened. She was then taken up to Columbus, Ohio, where she's now living with a foster family up there, and she's still going through the legal battle. But the attorney that represents the Rivka parents, the Muslim parents, is running for circuit court judge in Orlando. So if he believes wholeheartedly in Sharia law, which he does because he represents a Muslim parent, he's a Muslim himself, that the judges are going to cast down? I mean, if we have a judge who believes in Sharia law over the United States Constitution, is his prejudice now going to rule in favor of Sharia law over the U.S. Constitution? And why the movement around the United States? Why the movement of Islamists around the United States into what they deem to be just low positions, human rights councils? We have somebody running for the Florida State House. Now we have a Muslim running for the judgeship, a circuit court judge. But this is happening all around the United States. And their mindset, their beliefs now are going to be taking over and are going to supersede what our founding fathers put in place for Sharia law. I mean, a Muslim husband rapes his wife, but the judge sees no sexual assault because Islam forbids the wives to refuse sex. Muhammad said if a husband calls his wife to bed to have sexual relations and she refuses and causes him to sleep in anger, the angels will curse her till the morning. The Bukhari, 454, 460. Muhammad also said, by him whose hand lies my life, a woman cannot carry out the right of her Lord till she carries out the right of her husband, and if he asks her to surrender herself to him for sexual intercourse, she should not refuse him, even if she's on a camel's saddle. The Ibn Majah, 1854. So now, a New Jersey judge sees no evidence that a Muslim committed sexual assault of his wife, not because he didn't do it, but because he was acting on his Islamic beliefs. The court does not feel that under the circumstances that this defendant had a criminal desire to or intent to sexually assault or sexually contact a plaintiff when he did. The court believes that he was operating under his beliefs and that it is, as the husband, his desire to have sex when and whether he wanted to was something that was consistent with his practices and it was something that was not prohibited. Where is the moral and ethical part of this whole thing? Where is the morality of this? I mean, what is your opinion of this? I mean, is this something that we should just put off to the side? Or does the United States Constitution, does it trump Sharia law? This is outrageous. And for the National Organization of Women not to be in the forefront here in the United States, they have a lot to say. But boy, they've been silent about Islam. They've been silent about honor killings. They were silent about the Bridges TV honor killing, where the owner and manager of the Bridges TV killed his wife when she asked for a divorce. She had put a restraining order on her husband, her soon-to-be ex-husband, in February of 2009, and a day later, at the radio station itself, he chops her head off. That's barbaric. Where's the NOW gang? Where's the outrage? And now in New Jersey, in 2010, July of 2010, beyond the wishes of the wife, just say no. Oh, it's not a criminal desire. It's not intent or to sexual assault. She said no. She did not want to have sex. But because he was operating under his beliefs, his belief of Sharia law, it was the husband's desire to have sex. And whether or not she wanted it or not, it was her duty to have it. Now, I don't know about you, but at some point in time, you do respect your wife. And when she says no, she says no. But luckily, the appellate court overturned this decision, and a Sharia ruling by an American court has not been allowed to stand. But this time, cultural defense accepted as a non-consensual sex in New Jersey court, rejected on appeal by Eugene Volokh, the Volokh conspiracy. From today's opinion, a domestic restraining order case, the record reflects that plaintiff SD and defendant MJR are citizens of Morocco and adherents to the Muslim faith. They were wed in Morocco in an arranged marriage on July 31, 2008, when the plaintiff was 17 years old. The parties did not know each other prior to the marriage. On August 29, 2008, they came to New Jersey as a result of the defendant's employment in this country as an accountant. Well, numbers don't lie, I guess. Long discussion of the wife's allegations of abuse, which included several instances of non-consensual sex, as well as other abuse omitted for space reason. Upon their return to the apartment, defendant forced plaintiff to have sex with him while she cried. But it's all right. It's his duty. Muhammad says it was okay. This according to our religion. You are my wife. I can do anything to you. The woman, she said, submit and do anything I ask her to do. After sex, the defendant took plaintiff to a travel agency to buy her a ticket for her return to Morocco. What a gentleman, huh? What a real stud. Sent her back to Morocco to shut her up, have sex with her. But he knows that the laws here in the United States are a little bit more humane than that of Sharia law. However, the ticket was not purchased, and the couple returned to the apartment. Once there, the defendant threatened divorce, but nonetheless, again, engaged in non-consensual sex while plaintiff cried. Later that day, the defendant and his mother took plaintiff to the home of the imam. And in the presence of the imam, his wife and defendant mother, defendant verbally divorced plaintiff. Now, unlike the United States of America, where the woman can take half your stuff and you have to go through a prolonged battle in the courts, a Muslim man all he has to do is say, I want a divorce three times in front of the imam, and the woman basically has no rights. She's going to be on her own. But he had sex with her, and that was okay. So while recognizing that the defendant had engaged in sexual relations with the plaintiff against her expressed wishes in November 2008, and on the night of January 15th to January 16th, 2009, the judge did not find assault or criminal sexual conduct to have been proven. Unbelievable. The judge stated the court does not feel that under the circumstances that this defendant had a criminal desire to or intent to sexually assault. He had sex with her. She did not want to have sex with her. She said no. She was crying. He wants a divorce. Oh, sexual assault. No, not under Islam. Or to sexually contact the plaintiff when he did. The court believes that he was operating under his belief. That is, as the husband, it's his desire to have sex when and whether he wanted to was something that was consistent with his practices, and it was something that was not prohibited. Well, I'm surprised under the Quran he did not beat her, but lightly, not in the face, but in the stomach. Huh. After acknowledging that this was a case in which religious custom clashed with the law, and that under the law, plaintiff had a right to refuse defendant's advances, the judge found that the defendant did not act with criminal intent when he repeatedly insisted upon intercourse despite the plaintiff's contrary wishes. Having found acts of domestic violence consistent of assault and harassment to have occurred, the judge turned to the issue of whether a final restraining order should be entered. He found such an order unnecessary, vacated the temporary restraints previously entered in the matter, and dismissed the plaintiff's domestic violent action. But the appellate court reversed this absurd decision, saying, as the judge recognized, the case thus presents a conflict between the criminal law and religious precepts. In resolving this conflict, the judge determined to accept defendant from the operation of the state's statutes as a result of his religious beliefs. In doing so, the judge was mistaken. And that's the right decision. The original judge thought it was a conflict, so he determined to accept the defendant from the operation and from the state statutes because of his religious beliefs. So let's see. Let's ask the question again. A 53-year-old man decides he wants to marry a 6-year-old. He consummates the marriage at age 9 in New Jersey, and he claims religious beliefs. Is that pedophilia? Well, Muhammad did it. Is that okay? Does that make it right? So Sharia law is rearing its ugly head. We have an issue now where Islamists are going to be pushing the envelope, and they have been pushing the envelope. We have an issue. We have issues around the United States where Islamists are now running for public office. Whether it's lowly commissions in your county or cities, or they're running for circuit court judges, or they're running for your respective state houses and state senates, and of course we have them running for U.S. Congress positions. Now, can you imagine if a Muslim judge was to hear this case, and if a Muslim sitting on the appellate court sees this case, his religious belief, that trumps man-made law. Man-made law is the United States Constitution, ladies and gentlemen. That's what our founding fathers put together in order to create and form this country. And it's done very well for 230-plus years. Of course, now we have a problem in the White House with Sheikh Obama, who is dismantling this. Him and his comrades in the White House. Sheikh Obama, really hasn't lived by the Constitution, really doesn't care about the United States Constitution, doesn't care about your rights. It's what's best, what he sees best for you and I. And we have this appellate court, the appellate court in New Jersey who stood up to the judge who made this irrational decision, and the NOW gang, the National Organization for Women, are silent. They say, now we have in Alaska, you think in this remote state of Alaska, Alaska couple arrested for Islamic hit list. A U.S. couple has been charged with constructing and distributing a hit list containing 15 names of people who the two believed had harmed Muslim citizens. Paul and Nadia Rockwood were arrested after the husband created a list of 15 names, all of which matched people he said had hurt the people of Islam. His wife's participation seems to have been covering up the list and attempting to give it to an unnamed third-party source. Rockwood converted to Islam in 2001. So, Paul Muhammad Rockwood converted to Islam in 2001 and quickly became a devout follower of, where have we heard this name? Anwar Awlaki, the well-known extremist cleric who has called for violent jihad against those who threaten Islam. Nadia knew of her husband's radical beliefs. There we go with that word radical, ladies and gentlemen. It's actually its orthodox beliefs. It's not radical. It's the true beliefs of Islam. So Nadia knew of her husband's orthodox beliefs, but it's not known whether or not she shared them, though she does appear to have been aiding him. This hit list has not been released, but it's believed to be part of a wider personal conspiracy by Rockwood to commit acts of domestic terrorism, including the making of bombs. Gee, let's see, the Times Square bomber, he made a bomb and left it in an SUV in front of, Viacom building in New York City, and he was a follower of Anwar al-Awlaki. Then you have a domestic terrorist, Nidal Hassan, who was a major, the rank of major at Fort Hood, Texas, and he ended up killing 13 of his fellow soldiers, murdering 13 of them and wounding over 30, and he was a follower of Anwar al-Awlaki. Huh. Let's connect the dots. Rockwood has pled guilty to charges of terrorism, and his wife pled guilty to lying to investigators. Isn't this encouraging? So here we have it in Alaska. The last place that you thought that radical Islam, that fundamental Islam, that orthodox Islam would rear its ugly head. But the tie, again, ladies and gentlemen, the tie to all this is Anwar al-Awlaki. Now, Anwar al-Awlaki was an imam out of the Dar al-Hijra Mosque in Falls Church, Virginia, back in early 2000s. He has now fled to Yemen. Some say he was deported, but he was actually born in America, and he's now fled to Yemen, and he issued a fatwa 2 months ago, or several months ago, that said it was okay to kill American soldiers. And 2 months ago, he actually amended his fatwa and said it's okay to kill Americans. So you have these people via the internet buying up his CDs, listening to this cleric spew his orthodox Islamic beliefs. And we already have three instances. You have the Christmas Day underwear bomber. He was a follower of Anwar al-Awlaki. You have the Times Square bomber in New York earlier this year, back in May. He was a follower of Anwar al-Awlaki. And now we have Paul and Nadia Rockwood, Paul who converted to Islam in 2001, a follower of Anwar al-Awlaki. Who's broadcasting these sermons? Where are they getting them? Sure, they're getting them online. You have Nidal Hassan, who was a major at Fort Hood. He was the poster boy for moderate Islam. He was on Barack Hussein Obama's steering committee. Presidential candidate Barack Hussein Obama. He was on his steering committee. But Nidal Hassan was a follower of Anwar al-Awlaki. Go back to the mosques in America. Go back to the Dar al-Hijra Mosque in Falls Church, Virginia. Do you think that there's a pattern? Do you think that there is a pattern? When you start connecting the dots, this thing does not emanate just from the United States of America. This thing does not emanate just from Yemen. It goes through sources here in the United States. And who are followers of Anwar al-Awlaki? It's not just these little individuals who are pulling up their computer that are listening to this guy's drivel. What about the imams and the clerics, the Muslim clerics around the United States, like a Siraj Wahaj, who's never apologized for his, as Americans say, radical orthodox beliefs? No, it's deeper than that. You go to these mosques around the United States, these imams from Muzamil Siddiqui out in California, who's with the Islamic Society in North America, or at least was, they have these beliefs. They have the orthodox beliefs. And the orthodox belief is to undermine the United States of America. It's to kill Americans. They don't make any bones. They don't apologize for what the 19 Muslims did on September 11th, 2001. because they believe that. And that's what's frightening about this whole thing. That's what is disturbing. And now you have a judge in New Jersey who rules it's okay to basically to rape your wife. But he did it on religious beliefs. So therefore, because he did it under religious beliefs, there's no sexual assault here. It wasn't prohibited under his religion. What kind of nonsense is this? Our call-in number is 347-857-1380. Do you agree or disagree with that? I mean, should this guy be held to a different standard? Or how about we have Islamists assimilate into the American society? That's what has made this country great. That's what our grandparents and our great-grandparents did when they immigrated to the United States in the early 1900s, the late 1800s, all the way to the 1930s. They were looking to America for freedom. They were looking to America for opportunity. They were looking for America for individualism, to leave their oppressed lives that they had, whether it's Czechoslovakia, whether it was Hungary, whether it was Germany. They came to America for a new life, but they assimilated into our society, the American way. But Islamists don't assimilate into American society. And we have proof of that right there in New Jersey in July 2010. And the attacks that have occurred since 2000, or the attempted attacks that have on American soil that have occurred since 2001, are not coming from a pure white Christian Judeo-American. They're coming from naturalized citizens and sometimes people here who are not citizens, who are here illegally, who are Islamists. Their belief, what's being ingrained in them as children, is one is to hate Jews, two is to hate Christians. And they're coming into the United States of America and they're bringing their Sharia law and they're making demands that their way of life should not come under, quote, man-made law. And just understand that the United States Constitution is considered man-made law. Islam does not recognize man-made law. So you can be quiet for a few years. You can appear to have assimilated. But in the meantime, behind the scenes, you make your bombs, you plant your seeds, you find how the United States is vulnerable. And you buy an SUV and you park it in front of the Viacom building in Times Square. You load it full of explosives. Or you go and you rent a U-Haul truck, you load it full of explosives, and you drive it to the parking garage of the World Trade Center. Or if you go back to November of 2009, you get a van and you pack it with explosives, and you go to a 60-story Dallas office building and you park it there. These are regular occurrences that are happening in the United States of America. Oh, but, you know, Islam is peace. Islam is not here to be peaceful with non-Muslims. Islam is here to undermine the United States of America. They're here to undermine. And as the co-founder of CARE said, the Council on American Islamic Relations, the co-founder of CARE said that Islam is not in America to be equal, but to become dominant. The Quran, the Muslim book of scripture, should be the highest authority in America, and Islam, the only accepted religion on earth. And the more you read those words from Omar Ahmad, the co-founder of CARE, that Islam is not in America to be equal, but to become dominant, you start to get an understanding of what's happening, what is being taught in the mosques throughout the United States and throughout the world, how Islamic children are being brought up and brainwashed, and how they come to this country with one basic motive and one motive, and that is to bring and incorporate Sharia law into our society. And they hide behind the First Amendment right of free speech. And when you look at what's happening at Ground Zero with that mosque up at Ground Zero. You have this Imam Faisal Abdul Rauf, who sits there or stands in front of an American audience and proclaims that he's a man of peace. And he rolls his hands and he smiles and everybody soaks it up. Oh, Islam is peace. But then you read his words when he speaks in Arabic to Middle Eastern communities, and it's just the opposite. Islam will one day rule America. Islam will one day conquer America. We will incorporate Sharia law inside the United States of America. This is the same imam who has hoodwinked Michael Bloomberg, the mayor of New York. This is the same imam, Imam Faisal Abdul Rauf, who's a key figure in the Malaysian-based Perdana Global Peace Organization, who had their hands in that Memorial Day flotilla that was intercepted by the Israelis going to Gaza, in which 9 people were killed. It's where the Islamists of the flotilla attacked the Israeli commandos. The easy way, they attacked the Israeli commandos. They had weapons ready, sticks, pipes, anything they could get. They stabbed them, but the Israeli commandos, being the elite group that they are, overcame the Islamic scumbags and were able to commandeer the ship. But Imam Faisal Abdul Rauf, he's a central figure in this. So don't be fooled, ladies and gentlemen. Don't be fooled. When you look at the Perdana Institute, the Perdana Project, the Perdana Global Peace Organization, these are all kumbaya-sounding names. Man, these names sound really good, don't they? They sound really good to the ear. They sound so peaceful. But there's an ulterior motive behind this entire project. There's an ulterior motive behind this Faisal Abdul Rauf. He's not here to assimilate. The idea of putting a mosque 600 feet from Ground Zero, erecting a 15-story mosque, is a sign that they conquered New York, that they conquered the World Trade Center. They are going to spend $100 million and are going to erect a 15-story Islamic cultural center with a mosque at the top of this cultural center. You notice how really cool that sounds? How really unassuming it sounds? A cultural center. Can we all get along? A cultural center. No, it's an Islamic center. It's a mosque. It's a sign of domineering. And don't be fooled also. Look into the name. We've said it before. We've talked about it. But you have to talk about this every day. The Cordoba Initiative is the group that Imam Faisal Abdul Rauf is leading. Cordoba is a sign of dominance. That's in the late 700s AD to 1400 AD. That's when Islam conquered Spain. There's a significance behind the name that they've given, the Cordoba Initiative. So don't be fooled by this. A 15-story mosque 600 feet from where 3,000 people were killed and seven buildings were brought down. It's a disgrace. We have a caller on the line. And I'm not going to screen them, but I'm going to ask you to be clean about it. Hey, welcome to Radio Jihad.
Hey there, it's Holger from the chat room.
Hey, how you doing?
Doing good. How about you?
Not bad, man.
You're doing a great job here tonight. Appreciate the show. I just wanted to make a comment on this Ground Zero Mosque.
Yeah, please. Go ahead, Holger.
You know, I think, quite frankly, I think this thing is backfiring on these guys. I'm incensed about the whole thing, but this is starting to gather more and more attention. Obviously, there's been major protests against this. There's been major stuff on the blogs about it. I'm of the opinion that the cares of this country and so forth have been trying to fly below the radar for a lot of years with this whole soft jihad approach and so forth. And this guy up in New York City, I think quite frankly, is starting to piss some of these undercover jihadis off, because I think there's people that are learning more and more about Islam and its real intentions just because of this, and especially coming after the heels of the whole KSM trial thing.
Right.
So, bottom line, it's just as you said, it's just atrocious act and so forth. But, you know, this guy is trying to be real coy about this whole BS, and I think this thing is going to end up just blown up in their faces.
Well, I'll tell you, Holger, I hope so, and I have to agree with you on that. Because people are going to start, or they're actually starting to ask right now, where's the money coming from? They're raising $100 million, and they're going to erect this on September 11, 2011. Now, where do you get $100 million from unless you go to foreign sources? And they won't disclose, the Cordoba Initiative will not disclose where the money's coming from.
Yep.
They paid $4.5 million for the land from a New York family that sold it. Okay, anybody can go buy a building. And you know what? You can't begrudge that. They sold the building. But where's the money coming from? So now you start digging more and more into it, and you realize that there's more to this whole thing than meets the eye. Then you have the issue in Brooklyn that's coming about, and it's starting to wake up New Yorkers. And in Sheepshead Bay, which is another city in New York, in Brooklyn, they want to have the call to prayer five times a day. And the residents in that area are going, wait a minute, we have a noise ordinance here. Oh, well, yep. We'll only do it three times a day. Don't give any concessions a day.
Well, I don't know if you ever listened to Sirius or XM radio at all, but I happen to be a big fan of Andrew Wilkow, who's on Sirius XM.
Absolutely.
And he, a couple of weeks ago or a week and a half ago, he spent about 20 minutes on this Ground Zero Mosque. He had one of the attorneys that's representing the case where they're trying to get the building designated as a landmark. And
yeah.
So, I mean, you're talking about a Wilkow show who reaches, you know, millions of people, and they got a little bit of a glimpse. I mean, Wilkow, I don't know if you heard that episode or not, but Wilkow went on for about 10 minutes talking about, you know, hey, if they build this thing, is it going to be okay for me to open a Victoria's Secret across the street from it or a barbecue joint next door to it? It was absolutely hilarious. He just is ruthless.
Well, you know, and you know, we laugh about that, but that is the absolute truth. Can you open up a barbecue pork place there? Can you open up a liquor store there? Like a Victoria's Secret? They'll be jumping out the window when they see these naked broads. Maybe that's not a bad idea.
Yeah. Well, he was pretty sure that there would be an ordinance against that, but there certainly wouldn't be one for building a mosque within feet of the victims of that disaster. You know, I mean, it's just incredible. So I'm trying to be positive here. I'm hoping that this is gonna do nothing but expose people, to the true methods of madness of these people here in this country of Islam and so forth. So I'm hoping it does. I hope it does blow up in their faces. And I think the other thing is just, I mean, this Bloomberg, Mayor Bloomberg.
Oh.
I mean, this guy. My God. I mean, how far out can this guy be?
He's the chief putz in this whole thing, and it's frankly very sad. Especially, here's a guy who took over from Giuliani, who understood the ramifications of Islam, who actually did the bull thing and told that sheikh in Saudi Arabia to take his money and take a hike. And then we have the antithesis of that with Mayor Bloomberg, that biggest putz up there in New York, who's siding with this whole thing. And I don't understand it. So he's either prostituted himself for the almighty dollar, seeing $100 million coming into New York, and really doesn't care where the money's coming from, and he's not protecting and defending the people of New York.
Well, and considering the number of firefighters from the fire department of New York that lost their lives that day, I think Mayor Bloomberg better hope he doesn't have a fire at his condo.
You're right.
You
know, you're exactly
it's going to be a
right.
little slow getting to that one, I think. You know, this is the guy. This guy is literally the boss of the police department. The ultimate boss of the fire department and the police department. And this guy's got the insanity to throw this in their faces. I mean, if the guy agrees with it, I mean, I can see him trying to walk the fence, but to literally come out and promote it, I mean, it's just, I've never seen anything like it.
Yeah, it's outrageous. It really is. I want him to walk into the Red Hook Fire Department, and I want to look every person every fireman in that Red Hook district and say, I believe in this mosque, and I think it's the best thing for New York, and I want to see if he gets out, how he gets out of there.
Exactly. Yep. So anyway, appreciate all you do on the show here, trying to spread the word a little bit, get some more people in here, and keep up the good job.
Where is the outrage in this whole thing? And I'm glad that that's a positive spin on this, and I hope that people do remain positive on this. Somehow we have to talk Mayor Bloomberg and let him see the right ways of life here. But you have to believe that you follow the money trail. You sit there, it's a twofold issue. Follow the money. Somebody, there's got to be a reporter that has to be asking, where is the money, the $100 million coming from for the Cordoba Institute to build a 15-story mosque 600 feet from ground zero? And has Mayor Bloomberg compromised the very last principles that he holds to see the money trail that's going to come into New York? Is that what it means? I mean, hell, he spent $91 million of his own money to run for mayor, and he shouldn't have any problem with that. He had to change the rules to run again. So is this some sort of an elitist who's compromised his values, who's compromising the values of New York? This is absolutely insane. And the people that are behind this initiative, when you look at it, I mean, you have this broad Debbie Almontaser, a.k.a. Debbie Dahaba Almontaser, a.k.a. Daba Almontaser. She's a Yemeni descent. She co-designs the curriculum for the Muslim Communities Project at Columbia University. She does the Islamic Access, Channel 13, WNET. She's another one of these leaders that's behind the scenes at the Ground Zero Mosque. What is Mayor Bloomberg thinking? What is the City Council of New York thinking? And, of course, no news media outlet reported on June the 6th, 2010, as to how many people were at this rally at Ground Zero. There were between 5,000 to 10,000 people rallying to axe this mosque from Ground Zero. Did it make the mainstream news media, the so-called mainstream? No. There might have been a blurb on Fox. But 22 Muslims get together and they cry wolf, and it's plastered all over NBC, ABC, CNN, MSNBC. But 10,000 Americans get together and say, don't build this mosque there. You could have had rallies in all 50 states, in every major city, and people would have shown up because we can't go to New York, but we can rally with our brothers and sisters up in New York to say, this cannot happen. 3,000 people cannot have died in vain. People jumping out of windows as a result of 19 Muslims hijacking 4 planes on September 11th, 2001. We all remember the horrific scenes, and now they want to erect a 15-story mosque in New York at the very place where Islam raised their ugly tentacles. But follow the money. The Cordoba Initiative, C-O-R-D-O-B-A, Cordoba Initiative. See who's behind that. We're already seeing where Imam Faisal Raouf, where his ugly head's being reared. He had at least two of Imam Raouf's books, a 2000 treatise on Islamic law, and his 2004 What's Right with Islam laud the implementation of Sharia, including within America, and the rejuvenating Islamic religious spirit of Ibn Taymiyyah and al-Wahhab. Al-Wahhab is Wahhabism. That's what the Saudis believe in. Well, geez, if he believes in al-Wahhab, that means the funding sources are probably coming from partly from the Saudis. And we already saw who chipped in the $4.5 million, the United Nations, the Saudi Arabians, the Yemenis. Oh, yeah, ladies and gentlemen, the list gets longer and longer. And guess what? Connect the dots. And it leads back to Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia is the funding arm to the Muslim Brotherhood. The Muslim Brotherhood is the funding arm to the North American Islamic Trust, who holds over 80% of the titles and deeds of mosques in America. The Muslim Brotherhood controls the Council on American Islamic Relations, the Muslim Student Association that is permeating their way and putting their tentacles inside our colleges and universities all around the United States. It doesn't matter how big your college or university is, the Muslim Student Association has got their ugly head in things. You have the Islamic Society of North America. Muzam el-Siddiqui, the former leader of the Islamic Society of North America, Ingrid Mattson, they have the ear of the President of the United States, a one Dalia Moga head, who sits in the White House advising the President of the United States, Sheikh Obama, on Muslim affairs. So look where look where the web goes. Connect the dots. Just connect the dots, and it all leads back to Saudi Arabia. And they're using our petrodollars, the profits from our petrodollars, to support an ideology that's here to undermine the United States of America and the United States Constitution. They're using our First Amendment right to destroy the First Amendment. They're here to destroy the United States Constitution. And that's the sad part of it all. This document has served well for over 230 years. And we have an ideology, an extreme fundamental orthodox ideology that's masquerading itself as an all-inclusive, all-in-one, a peaceful organization. And it's only a few on the fringe. Well, when you look at Imam Faisal Rauf of the Cordoba Institute, the Perdana Global Peace Organization, Imam Rauf believes that the 2000 Treatise on Islamic Law and the 2004 What's Right with Islam laud the implementation of Sharia included within America. That is the ultimate goal, ladies and gentlemen. It's just like the United Kingdom. The ultimate goal is to get Sharia law inside the Western democracies, curtail free speech, make it illegal, make it unlawful to speak, to tell the truth about Islam. What say you on this? I mean, are we really going to stand for this? Are we going to stand for a mosque at Ground Zero? Well, hell, why don't we allow the Japanese to put up a monument in Pearl Harbor? They, after all, they bombed Pearl Harbor, so let's erect some sort of a Japanese temple there. I mean, this is ludicrous. What is it going to take? Is it going to take another 9/11 attack in order for the American people to wake up to realize that Islam is not peace? Islam is not here to be equal? Omar Ahmad, the co-founder of CARE, said it. Islam's not in America to be equal, but to become dominant. Those words in itself should give everybody pause. Islam is not in America to be equal, but to become dominant. That is an imperialistic attitude. That means that we are not as good as Muslims. And heaven forbid you use the word Muslim these days. Oh, my Lord. You can't say the word terrorist. You can't use the word jihadist. You can't use the word Islamic jihadist. This is the kind of thing that's coming out of this current administration. And this is a man who raised his hand to protect and defend the United States Constitution. And the Islamists are laughing all the way to the bank right now. We've become more dependent upon foreign sources of oil. Sheikh Obama has done nothing for 94 days. Oh, well, he said a couple of things. Oh, well, he doesn't sleep. He can't sleep at night because of what's happening in the Gulf. Really? Are you going on vacation? Or you went on vacation again? Demonize your opponents. Demonize, demonize, demonize. And just offer lip service, just like Islamists do. You know, if they say it enough times, people will start believing it. Well, we at Radio Jihad don't believe it. We've seen it. We see it happening every day. And when you start reading books, when you start reading the writings, read the book American Jihad by Steve Emerson. Read the book by Mark Gabriel called Coffee with the Prophet, Mark A. Gabriel. He was a professor at Al-Aqsa University in Cairo. Came to Christ, had questions about Islam, started questioning the professors. Wrong thing to do. He was stabbed 4 times. They tried to kill him again. Now he's somewhere outside Cairo, Egypt. He's somewhere in Europe. He's written some books. It's called Coffee with the Prophet. A great book. A great book. Read while you want to get a flavor of what's going on in the world. Read While Europe Slept by Bruce Bauer. Bruce Bauer's gay. Oh, my God. Sorry about that. But Bruce Bauer wrote a book While Europe Slept. And you'll see what's going on in the Netherlands, what the Dutch are going through, Norway, the United Kingdom. All of what's happening in Europe has started to come across the pond and is now infecting the United States of America. Islam is a cancer, ladies and gentlemen. It's a cancer that's here to undermine our way of life, the American way of life. I heard Glenn Beck say something today that Superman, the last Superman show, Superman, Truth, Justice, and the American Way, they removed the American Way. It's now truth and justice. That's what the problem is. You have Islam that's a religion. It's a political ideology that's masquerading as a religion. Very sad. Very sad. You know, our founding fathers, our grandfathers, our fathers who fought in the world wars in Vietnam, they did it to protect us so we have the freedoms that we enjoy today. And now we see an ideology, a fundamental orthodox ideology, who is trying to undermine our way of life, and they want to replace that with their fundamental orthodox laws. And it's not just one or two people. This is a concerted effort that's going on around the world. It's a concerted effort that's occurring here in the United States. It's done through organizations that sound like as if they are peaceful organizations. They are all assuming. But Islamists are not assimilating into our society. And the article we talked about in the very beginning, the New Jersey judge who said that man did not sexually assault his wife, that's a clear example of the lack of assimilation by Islam in the United States. They don't care about our laws. They don't care about man-made law. The United States Constitution is considered man-made law. And the only president to really stand up to Islam was Thomas Jefferson. He read the Quran. He understood what Islam was about. And he refused to pay the ransom, the extortion that the Muslim Barbary pirates were extorting against the United States so they wouldn't take over our trading ships in the 1800s. It sounds like a long time ago, and it was a long time ago, but it's something that's being repeated right now. And we don't have a leader in Washington, D.C., certainly not with Sheikh Obama, who's willing to stand up and to protect the American way of life, protect our values, and protect the United States Constitution. It's very sad in that regard. But we are going to overcome, because I like that call. I like the caller who called up. He was positive. Holger thought that there's still hope out there, and there is still hope. We have to get together. It's time for Americans to stand up and say, we're not going to tolerate this anymore. And it doesn't matter who in the hell gets upset about this. we're standing up for American values, just like John Wayne Apple Pie and Chevrolet, even though it's part of Government Motors now.
One nation.
Ladies and gentlemen, join us next Monday evening from 7 to 8 p.m. on Blog Talk Radio, www.blogtalkradio.com. Go to our website, www.radiojihad.org. God bless our troops and God bless America. Radio Jihad, striving to educate America.
What do those words mean to you? To me, they say, thank you, America, for your strength, for your courage, and for our freedom, which has been a beacon to the world for 200 years.
Of the United States of America.
Whose bright stars are 50 states, each bearing its own stamp of individuality. People, 200 million strong. People who have come to her from all corners of the earth. A land of laws with an ingenious system of checks and balances that allows no man to become a tyrant and lets no group prevail if their power is not tempered with a real concern for the government. A land where the right of dissent and free speech is jealously guarded, where the ballot box is the sword, people, its wielder.
One nation, under God.
A land where freedom of worship is a cornerstone of her being. A land graced with temples and churches, synagogues and altars that rise in profusion to embrace all the religions of the world.
Indivisible.
A land forged by the hot steel and raw courage, conformed forever by the awful crucible. Civil war. Where man, in pursuit of an honest life, will not be denied his chance. Where her citizens move freely within her vast borders without hindrance or fear. A land brimming with opportunity. Where freedom of choice is the guideline for all. The courts of our land are open to all. Its wheels of justice grind for all causes. All people. They look to every avenue for justice, every concern of the law, and they temper their reasoning with mercy for all.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, and good night.